Larry Kudlow here. Cybersecurity is in the headlines right now, as many Las Vegas casinos were just hit with a massive ransomware attack. The casinos that paid the ransom took a sizable financial hit. Your company could be next. If you're an executive who may feel the heat if your company is hacked, suggest that your head of cybersecurity should visit Ericsson.com to schedule a conversation. Ericsson provides proactive cybersecurity management and a zero trust process that works. Visit Ericsson.com. That's Ericsson.com.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
Well, two things I experienced this weekend that have led me to where we are today, meaning this very place, this very time, this very hour. It's interesting because obviously there's a lot of very serious things happening in the world, and I follow a bunch of podcasts, a lot of video podcasts, a lot of YouTube channels of a lot of great thinkers that I turn to from time to time to see what they're saying about different affairs. So I turn on this one podcast that I follow, and the person gives a little bit of a dissertation on the situation in the Middle East, and he says something to the effect of, oh, but the media is too busy telling you who Taylor Swift is dating and what Beyonce Knowles is up to. And I thought to myself, well, what a jerk I am, because I do spend some time talking about pop culture issues, talking about societal issues, to talking about some of the lighter issues in the news regarding all this other stuff. And I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe I shouldn't do anything but talk about these very heavy, weighty issues that clearly a lot of folks have on their mind. And then my wife and I were driving out to Long Island for a family function yesterday, and the radio was tuned to this station. And immediately, there's a lot of discussion about what's happening in the Middle East and Israel and Gaza. My wife runs, well, as much as you can run while you're seated in a car that and driving. She moves quickly to change the channel, and she says, I just can't. She says, I cannot keep being depressed for an hour and a half drive and hearing about how awful the world is. I know the world is awful, and I need a little bit of a break. So my hope is that a lot of you feel the same way as my wife does, and that you need a break. If there's any breaking news over the course of the next 4 hours, believe me, we're going to bring it to you first. We're going to bring it to you in a manner that I think is responsible and interesting. But if you need a break from hearing about children being killed and terrorism and all the horrible things happening in Israel and in the Gaza Strip right now, you are in luck, because I have persuaded to return to this program a man who is a happiness expert. I don't know that there's a certification in that field, but if there is, believe me, Jeffrey Gurian has it. Jeffrey Gurian is a comedy writer, a stand-up comic, a host, an author, a producer, a director, and a former dentist. Jeffrey, it is great to see you again.
Frank, it is always a treat to be on with you. Really, there's no one else that I'd rather stay up late with than you.
Well, that's
and that's
kind.
The truth.
I appreciate that. I even if it's not true, I appreciate you it saying
it
anyway. You know, it's funny, Jeffrey. Rudy Giuliani went on Saturday Night Live right after September 11th, and he kind of rallied not only New York, but the country to New York's cause and what was going on. And Lorne Michaels, the head of Saturday Night Live, said to Rudy Giuliani,
is it okay to be funny again? And Mayor Giuliani had that great line, why start now? But I do feel like a lot of folks sort of feel the way I did when I was listening to that podcast, that maybe you should feel a little guilty by laughing and having a good time and enjoying yourself on the radio while there are so many people suffering in the world. As a guy that knows a thing or two about pulling people out of despondent moods, can you give us some sort of blessing or permission to have fun and laugh and be happy again while people are dying and fighting and losing their lives and some people are kidnapped in the Middle East?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. It's a struggle for everyone, and it's a struggle for me as an empath. I feel people's pain. I feel more than I wanted to, which is why I became so engrossed in happiness and writing books about happiness, because I've had to struggle with it my entire life. When you feel things so deeply, you're affected by the weather, by color, by the people in the room, by everything around you. Hearing this kind of news on a day-to-day basis, I can't help but listen, and I don't want to listen. I have to turn it on, and I don't want to turn it on. Comedy for me is a great outlet. The comedy clubs are filled with people who were there because they need to laugh. Now more than ever, because every place you look, there's something negative, and you don't know whether you're even getting the truth. You know, I listen to a certain station. I listen to WABC, and I listen to Newsmax, and I feel like I get a balanced report. I get the truth. Mm. When I turn on other stations by accident, I hear what other people are getting, and I know why they're not informed. There are people, I was talking to a young person recently who didn't know about Hunter Biden's laptop. Never heard of it.
Right. Well, yeah.
Never heard of it.
Definitely, we all live in our own bubbles. But beyond the editorial content, what can you say to people that, you know, about that makes them feel not guilty about laughing for an hour instead of watching bombs exploding in the Middle East?
Well, because the alternative is horrible. We would all be in our rooms crying if we didn't do that. We have to try and lead some semblance of a normal life. And I think the people in those areas are doing the same thing. The people in Israel are trying to be very upbeat. I have friends there, and they write to me, and they're telling me what's going on. And people are trying their best in certain areas to lead a so-called normal life. We have no alternative, Frank. What can we do?
Right.
If I was to dwell on it, you know, I cut out this article, and it says 77% of Americans are engaging in addictive behavior to cope with mental health issues due to stress. 77% of people are so stressed out. They don't know what to do.
It's true.
Every place you turn, there's something horrible happening. You know, we don't know what's happening with the government. The border is open. Mayor Adams.
Me, you don't have to give me the litany
Meet Mayor Adams. I had a feeling I was going to meet this guy eventually, and I wanted to talk to him. Not, you know, egotistically. What am I going to say to him that's going to change anything? You know, I mean, like it would be very ego-driven to think I could say something. But he said to me, you look like the kind of guy that we should share a cigar together sometime. And I thought that was cool, you know. And
I've actually shared a cigar with him, and he's actually a delightful companion as far as chatting and as cigars go.
And a great suit.
Yeah, that's no reflection on his mayoralty, believe me.
No, for sure.
You know, it's funny, Jeffrey. I happened to on Friday night after my, you know, I'm on a weird schedule on the weekend because I'm nocturnal during the week, and then I try to go back to a conventional schedule on the weekend. So I end up staying up later than my wife does, usually on Friday and Saturday night, or sometimes I'll just get up super early. And so I end up watching a lot of these wrestling documentaries because I'm a fan of classic pro wrestling. And sure enough, there's this documentary that it's taken me 5 times to finish it on Mick Foley, a terrific wrestler.
Oh, and he's a stand-up comic, too. Well, he's a friend of mine.
Sure enough, Yeah. They get to the portion of the documentary focusing on his stand-up comedy career. Who's in the documentary? You are.
Oh, really?
And, yeah.
Oh.
I'm sitting there, 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm trying to, you know, trying to get myself in a drowsy state of mind again. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. And you and I had just talked, and I said, oh my, Jeffrey Green is in this documentary. Am I dreaming? And sure enough, you were in it, and I was not dreaming. But that's the case when it came to the Bill Murray documentary. You're the go-to expert on comedy, comedy history, the craft of comedy. One question I have for you, though, is a lot of comedians, especially these days, they not only feel the need to be political, but their entire act is political. I mean, whether they're conservative like Dennis Miller, whether they're progressive like Marc Maron, whether they're generally left-wing but swerve every so often like Bill Maher. Do you get political in your act?
Never.
Never.
I don't do anything controversial.
And that's a concerted strategy on your part.
It's not funny to me. Right. I don't do therapy on stage either. A lot of comics get up and they talk about the most intimate things. Talk about Marc Maron. The first time I saw him, when his first show, Scorching the Earth, I'll never forget it. I was in the audience, and he talked about his breakup with his first wife, who I knew. And he said such intimate things that I was embarrassed myself. Mm. I felt embarrassed. And I was like, how does anyone have the nerve to go and do that? People loved it because they relate to it. But it takes a lot of courage to get out on stage and expose yourself. I don't do that. I talk about things that strike
Pee-wee Herman
me funny.
Found that out the hard way.
Yeah, well, they expose themselves a little too much. But yeah, I talk about things that strike me funny that everybody laughs at. I don't like anything divisive. These days, first of all, you have to be so careful what you say. You say anything at all. There are people sitting home right now who are trying to figure out what to be offended by.
Right. Oh, don't
they cannot figure it out. They're going to stay up all night till they could figure out what to be offended by.
But so
it's horrible.
When you're performing, Democrats, Republicans, non-political, anybody can enjoy your show.
I perform tonight, everybody. And I talk about, I say, well, there's a very diverse audience, but we're all the same. You know, we share similar traits in common. One of the things we share in common is that we tend to exaggerate. Think about it. How many times have you gotten that call from a friend who tells you he was almost killed, but he wasn't even hurt, right? Almost killed. He has the nerve to say he was almost killed, doesn't have a scratch on him. And they all have some weird story, and it all ends the same way. And one more inch, and I would have been killed. And I'm like, what are you exaggerating for? If you're going to tell people you're almost killed, at least have the decency to be severely injured.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Or else it diminishes the severity of the story, right? So I talk about things like that, things that people can relate to that strike me funny. I talk about ripped jeans. Ripped jeans are just torn pants, Frank.
Right.
That's
I've
all.
Seen that.
But
yeah.
Torn pants doesn't sound cool.
You know, it's so funny. My wife has, I think, a couple of pairs of these torn dungarees, right?
Ripped jeans.
And the knees are torn, and it's intentional, right?
But what's the message?
Well, but so I will sometimes, when she's wearing them, I'll poke at the hole.
At the hole, right.
And she'll yell at me. She says, you're going to rip them. I said,
they're
Rachel,
already ripped.
They're already ripped.
They're already ripped.
If anything, I'm going to improve upon them.
Exactly.
I'll rip them more. They think of how much they'll go for if they're ripped more.
And the more ripped they are, the more expensive they are.
It's amazing.
I saw a girl last week just wearing pockets, Frank. That's all that was left. Both legs were completely gone, just pocket. $1,000. $1,000, right?
Jeffrey, I do have to ask you on a sad note, one of the most iconic sitcoms in history is Three's Company. And an integral part of that show, particularly early on, was Suzanne Summers. Today
we just lost her, right?
Would have been her birthday. Unfortunately, she passed away yesterday at the age of 76 due to breast cancer. Did you know Suzanne Summers at all?
No, but I read her story. They said she had been fighting it for 23 years.
Mm.
And she always talked about how often she had sex with her husband.
Right.
Several times a day. I just read a couple of weeks ago. I don't know. Maybe that's what happened to her. I don't know. But I wouldn't make jokes about something as serious as someone passing away. But I just found it odd. That was their main thing. They always wrote about how often they got together. And he wrote a beautiful poem about her just yesterday.
Yeah, they seem very much in love. And
yes.
You know a lot of Hollywood couples, probably a lot more than I do. And the entertainment-based couples, they don't necessarily tend to be long-lasting in the relationship
department. It's very
rare.
You know why? Ego is a very strange thing. fame is a heavy drug. I've known many big stars, and I won't mention any names, but a lot of them are just insane. I think it's hard to handle fame when people give you everything that you want. Nobody says no to you, and you know that you're just a regular human being.
Well, so again, not mentioning any names, when you talk about a lot of these folks that are just insane, do you think that insane people go into performing and show business, or does performing and show business make you insane?
I think it's the second. They have to have a little bit of it before, but when people cater to you all the time and they're at your whim, it's a very strange thing. I've experienced it to a tiny, tiny degree because I'm not on that level at all. But when people want to do whatever it is that you want, nobody says no to you. And you know in your own mind that you're just a regular person. And people, you know, in this country, we don't have royalty. Our show business people are our royalty. Mm-hmm. And they get treated that way. And I've seen it. I mean, just some people just act very, very strange.
That's for sure.
It doesn't fall within the quote of normalcy.
I mentioned my trip to Long Island this weekend. You mentioned that you had just performed tonight or a few hours ago.
Yeah.
You are doing something in Long Island on Saturday.
It's coming up this coming Saturday.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Well, in Sag Harbor. They're calling it the Ha Ha Comedy Festival.
Sounds funny already.
A fellow named Paul Anthony, who produces a lot of festivals, is doing this special festival, and I'm the surprise guest.
Oh, well, should you really be outing yourself 6 days before?
Well, no, I told him I was coming on, and I was going to talk about it. It's at the it's in Sag Harbor at the Bay Street Theater, and it holds about 400 people, and it's going to be amazing. I was there for another event recently. It's a beautiful theater. Sag Harbor is a beautiful little town.
I've been to Sag Harbor. I've not been to this theater. I'm told it's great, though. So it's at the Bay Street Theater this coming Saturday. If people want to get tickets, they can go to baystreet.org. Simple as that. Right. Baystreet.org this coming Saturday in Sag Harbor. That should be a lot of fun.
October 21st, 8 o'clock show. Come say hi. As a matter of fact, the last show that we did where we gave away tickets in Southampton, if you remember, I was at the opening act on for Sticks and Stones. The club, some of the listeners from your show came, and we had a great time together. They came over to say hi, and we had a lot of laughs, and it was great.
Wonderful. If you are a listener and you see Jeffrey on Saturday, don't heckle. We don't want any of our listeners responsible for heckling.
But come say hi after the show.
Now, Jeffrey, you're obviously Jewish, right?
Yes.
And
obviously.
A lot of Jewish, only because you've talked about it before. Yeah. A lot of Jewish comedic personalities have involved Judaism in their performance. My favorite and the one that most immediately comes to mind is Mel Brooks, but also people like Woody Allen and many others, going back to the heyday of the Borscht Belt, going back to the 40s and 50s, they make Judaism central to their identity. And Jackie Mason, I think that was the ultimate, right.
Yeah. He was a good friend of mine.
And a lot of folks, a lot of Gentiles wonder the proper line between laughing with someone versus laughing at someone that is not necessarily your persuasion, you know, whether it's Jewish or whether you took a black, white, if it's a Chris Rock situation. I wanted to run this by you because I'm a big fan of the TV show Seinfeld. I know you probably know Jerry.
Yeah, sure, I know Jerry for many years, before he was famous.
I'm sure. But did you like the show itself?
Yeah, sure. It was very clever, of course.
Because I know some comics, they weren't as crazy about it because they feel like they lived it, kind of. And it didn't necessarily strike them with the same sort of humor that it did me. But I wanted to ask you about this because I was at a Bris last weekend, and I just happened to read this article in, I don't remember where I came across it, but there's a wonderful episode of Seinfeld. I thought it was wonderful. I thought it was very funny, and it has to do with a Bris and the Moyle. Here's a little bit of the Moyle, who had a lot of scenes in this particular episode, giving Elaine a bit of a lecture on where she puts a glass on a table.
Yeah.
Darling, you see what that glass is?
You see how the glass is near the edge of the table? You've got the whole table there to put the glass. Why, you chose the absolute edge. So half the glass is hanging off the table. You breathe and that glass falls over. And then you got broken glass on the carpet. Embedded in the carpet fibers, deep, deep in the shag. Broken glass, bits of broken glass. You can never get up. You can't get it up with a vacuum cleaner. Even on your hands and knees with a magnifying glass, you'll never get all the pieces. And then you think you got it all. And then one day, 2 years later, you're walking barefoot, you step on a piece of broken glass and you kill yourself. Is that what you want? I don't think that's what you want, is it? Do you, huh?
He's very highly recommended, so...
Meaning the Moyle.
The Moyle,
that,
right.
That episode...
That's a tough job, by the way.
That episode, which is called The Briss, it aired 30 years ago yesterday. So a lot of folks are looking back at it. And one of the things that I had no idea about, and I consider myself a little bit of a Seinfeldian scholar, not a Talmudic scholar, but a Seinfeldian scholar, is that apparently Jason Alexander, who is Jewish... had a big problem with that episode. Here's an interview that he did about 10 years ago on the 20th anniversary of that episode discussing some of his issues. And I want you to kind of make a ruling as a comic and as someone who's Jewish, what your view is of the appropriateness of the Moyle in that episode.
The other episode was an episode called The Briss. The version of it that came to the table... The character of the Moyle was disgusting. I think it remains disgusting in the show that we did. But it was... You got to go a long way to hit my Jew button. I give you, Jews are funny, and you can be really sacrilegious with me, and I'll take every Jew joke you got, even the borderline offensive ones. To a non-Jew, the whole practice of the circumcision, the bris, is mysterious and kind of distasteful. And to present the figure of the Moyle, the person who goes, I'm going to be the guy, my life's work is going to be to remove the foreskin from the genitals of young Jewish boys. That's what I devote my life to, is already a person of questionable character to the non-Jew. And to make one who is a child-hating, self-loathing, foul-mouthed, incompetent, to me was anti-Semitic in a hurtful way. And I went to Larry and I went, I won't be in this episode. This one you have to take me out of. I have to boycott this. And I said, "You listen, exactly what I said to you. I'm up for every Jew joke you've got. This is an offense." And he didn't see it at first, and then he said, I'm going to soften it. And I went, okay. And I still think it was, I'm not proud of that episode at all. I'm not proud of that portrayal. And I don't think it was a particularly good element in an otherwise pretty good episode. But those are the only two.
I got to tell you, I was absolutely shocked to hear his criticism of that. Now, when he explains it, it makes perfect sense. But what do you think? As a comic, as a guy that's done some writing, as someone who's Jewish, what do you make of that portrayal of the Moyle as sort of this neurotic guy that is so, sort of incompetent? And what do you make of what Jason Alexander said there?
He explained it really well. I have a feeling that it had more to do with watching the episode. Hearing it is different.
Mm-hmm.
I think that more went on the set because the way he described him, you know, stereotypes... first of all, I hate stereotypes. I love breaking down stereotypes. I hate when people think they can look at you and know all about you just by looking at you. When he said that he can take any kind of Jewish joke, I believe him. And I have a feeling that there was something about the way that character was portrayed that was over the top. So I can understand being defensive. What you said, you know, years ago, all comedians were Jewish.
Right.
Even if you weren't Jewish, if you were a comic, you were like part of the tribe, you know?
It's a very interesting thing. I used to hear from a lot of Italians that did not like The Sopranos. They found that was stereotypical and reinforced a lot of negative stereotypes, namely the Italian gangster kind of thing. But one of the things that people that were affiliated with the show mentioned, and I've asked them all about this, one of the things they all mentioned is that everyone that made the show, all the actors, a lot of the writers, a lot of the production people, they were all Italian. Does it change your perception, or should it change anyone's perception, that the people that wrote that episode were Jewish, Larry David and Jerry
Seinfeld?
Exactly.
I was going to say that, too. And as far as the Italian thing, I don't know if you know, there was a very famous play called Six Goombas and a Wannabe.
Yes, yes.
I was the wannabe.
Right.
Do you know Vince Gagliarmella?
I know who he is. I don't know him personally.
He was Vincent Gardini's nephew,
mm-hmm.
the very famous Italian actor. And before it went to Broadway, I was the wannabe because all my friends were Italian. There's nobody closer than Italians and Jews.
That's right. Oh,
that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, yeah, I mean, we have so much similarities of the things we like and the way we treat our families and our children and all, you know. There's a segment of every population. That's true. Not all stereotypes are completely wrong. There is some truth in all stereotypes. You know, I was friends with the whole cast of The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful show. I loved the show.
So did I.
And you know, you interview people like that
on
your show all
absolutely.
The time. How you do that is amazing to me, by
the
way.
I appreciate that. Jeffrey Gurian is here. You could see him on Saturday at the Ha Ha Festival. He is the surprise guest. Don't tell anyone, if you're going, don't tell anyone he's going to be there, but you can get tickets at baystreet.org. It's baystreet.org. If you have questions about anything we're talking about, we got a lot more to get to. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
New activation and upfront payment for 3-month plan required. Taxes and fees extra. Additional restrictions apply. See mintmobile.com for full terms.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Do your thing however you cha-ching with Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/offer23.
Football is back, and we have you covered each weekday afternoon on OutKick's Hot Mic with Hutton Withrow.
Some of the best football guests, from Armando Salguero and John McClain to Trey Wallace and Bobby Carpenter, plus the top headlines and reaction to the college football and NFL weekends.
The Chiefs go for dynasty mode with Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Andy Reid.
They're the favorite, right?
Yeah, they have to be. The AFC goes through Arrowhead, but the Bengals and Jets, they're all in to reach Vegas. And the Bills and Dolphins are also confident. Withrow, what about college football?
Can you say three-peat? That's what they're hoping to say in Athens, Georgia, as the Bulldogs continue their march to college football dominance, while a cast of usual characters led by Michigan, Ohio State, and Bama nip at their heels.
There's plenty of craziness on a week-to-week basis. Pull up to the bar with us each weekday afternoon. We're streaming live 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern across the OutKick Network. Podcasts available everywhere, and always check out OutKick.com.
NFL and college football covering your favorite teams. OutKick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow.
Instacart helps you get beer and wine delivered in as fast as an hour. So, whether you need to fill the cooler for tailgate season or fill your glass for Pinot by the fire season, you can save time by getting fall sips delivered in just a few clicks. Visit instacart.com or download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Minimum order $10. Additional terms apply. Must be 21 or over for alcohol delivery where available. Instacart. Add life to cart.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Thank you. Jeffrey Gurian is here. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Comedy writer, stand-up comic, host, author, producer, director, former dentist. And evidently, this is his theme song. Jeffrey, why is this your theme song, Jump Around?
You know, it started years ago when I was on Sirius XM because I jump around. I go to every comedy club because, you know, not only do I do the things that you mentioned, but I'm a comedy journalist and I write about what's going on in the comedy scene. So in order to do that, I go to every club, like just about every night, and I jump around. And so Ron Bennington, you know, picked up on it, and they started playing that.
That became my theme song. That's outstanding.
And he'd say, when you hear that song, you know, Jeffrey Gurian's in the house.
Indeed. That's our cue. Hey, you caught a special screening about Ernie Kovacs recently. Now, I didn't realize, because I never really saw Ernie Kovacs perform until after he was already gone. I did not realize that he passed away in 1962. And I think
it says a car accident.
It says a lot about his work that it's lived on for 60 plus years since then. For people that have been born since 1962, who's Ernie Kovacs?
He was the precursor to Eric Andre. Your young audience will know how crazy Eric Andre is. He's got the craziest show on TV. Ernie Kovacs was doing that 50 years ago. Unbelievable what he did. And his wife was Edie Adams. Now, I get interesting contacts on social media because I'm out there. I'm all over social media. Ernie Kovacs was married to Edie Adams. Edie Adams had a son, Josh Mills, and he wrote to me and he invited me to this Ernie Kovacs thing. I had never met him. But he said he knew of me and he wanted to invite me because he thought I would enjoy it. And I went last night. And who was the moderator? Alan Zweibel.
Oh,
you
really?
Know Alan Zweibel.
Of course I do.
So Alan Zweibel gave me my start in comedy when he was up at Saturday Night Live. I brought my earliest films up there and Alan saw them. And I had, they were very crazy films. I don't know if I ever told you about them. Like, several men were arrested for smearing cream cheese on the ankles of elderly women who wore their stockings rolled down like bagels. You ever see the old women with the stockings around their ankles? It looked like bagels to me. So I got my dear grandmother, who had such a great sense of humor. She made believe she had a Jewish accent. And she said, you know, in the Jewish religion, we have two kinds of stockings, one for milk and one for meat. She goes, and this crazy man, he smeared cream cheese on my meat stockings and I can't get it off. And I zoomed in with my Super 8 camera on her ankles. I brought it to Saturday Night Live. Alan Zweibel said to this day, he can't get that image out of his mind.
I love it.
Cheese on the ankles. So we went last night and it was a fantastic, it was a documentary about Ernie Kovacs, who did the craziest things 50 years ago. Very special effects. Nobody was doing that in television in those days. They were amazed at the things that he could do. And then he would have stuff like the Nairobi Trio, three men in gorilla suits who would play music like on a xylophone. He just had a lot of very wild stuff. And I was a little kid and I loved it.
A lot of times, even if the subject is great, a lot of times the documentary can just be okay. But this was a documentary that was worth seeing.
They compiled a lot of his special. It wasn't like a straight documentary. They compiled some of his best stuff from all of his shows.
Can regular people see it, or you got to be invited to a VIP screening? Like
I don't know if they should. It was at the Anthology Film Archives on 2nd and 2nd. But there's a book. Josh Mills wrote a book about it. And this girl that I was with bought me a copy. Isn't that nice?
That is nice.
Most girls don't do that.
That is nice.
It was very nice.
But if people get the opportunity to see it, they should. And you know what kind of car Ernie Kovacs was driving when he got into that car accident.
I did yesterday, but I forgot. He crashed it into a tree. Well, what kind of car was it?
A regular guest of ours would be the first one to remind you. That's Ralph Nader, Chevy Corvair.
Oh, really?
Unsafe at any speed. Unsafe at any speed.
It was for him, for sure.
That is for sure. All right, 800-848-9222. But Ernie Kovacs, the interesting thing about him is they say he really inspired the next six decades of comedy.
Well, like
things
Steve
that
Allen?
Conan O'Brien was doing, you know.
No, but even way before, Steve Allen used to do a lot of crazy stuff, too, if you remember.
Oh,
Steve
no
Allen.
Doubt. No doubt. No doubt. Wasn't Ernie Kovacs also briefly the host of The Tonight Show when they had a bunch of these rotating hosts after Steve Allen
yes,
left?
Yes, I believe that he was. Yeah. He had his own show for several seasons.
Right. Yeah.
But yes, he was a host on The Tonight Show as well.
All right, Joe in Queens has a question for you. You're on with Jeffrey Gurian, Joe.
I have a question. Yeah. A two-part question. One is, do you draw like, say when you're starting out writing comedy, do you think in terms of broad or general categories, or you try and pick up something specific? And did you think the Three Stooges was really, that didn't totally resonate with me, that type of humor?
Well, it was silly. It was silly for its day. I liked some of them, you know, and it's funny that you mentioned them, because there was an article that just came out yesterday about the tragic lives that they led, the Three Stooges.
I did see that, actually.
Yeah, and I tried to read it, but it said I had ad blockers, and it wouldn't show me the whole article.
The worst.
But I started reading it, and it just happened to be about the Three Stooges. There were four of them, though, you know.
Well, Shemp, right?
Shemp, yeah, yeah. Shemp. But in terms of your question about whether I look for general things, it depends on who I'm writing for. If I'm writing for myself, I just write about things that strike me funny. Like I said, ripped jeans. Everybody sees them. To me, they look like torn pants.
Mm-hmm.
So I would write about something like that, you know? But if like when I wrote for Joan Rivers, she asked me to write about dating older men. When you're writing for a very experienced comedian, they know what they want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll give you a category, and they'll say, write jokes about this. And I wrote her this joke once. I said, I was dating this guy who was so old, the only thing firm about him was his cane. That was it. That was it. So, you know, I love writing one-liners. One-liners was the best. When I wrote for Rodney Dangerfield, that was so fun because his whole thing was one-liner.
You know, and thanks for the call, Joe. Those types of jokes where, you know, you talk about, I was dating someone so old, and then everyone says, how old were they?
Or, right. You know, like Johnny Carson.
What do you call that family of jokes? Everyone knows what a knock-knock joke is. Everyone
one-liners.
Knows what a Polish joke is.
But you call them one-liners.
But they're not.
Yeah.
They're kind of degree of severity jokes. He was so old, and then you could keep going forever.
Well, nobody does that on stage.
Right.
Johnny Carson used to do that on The Tonight Show. How old was he?
Right.
How fat was
right,
he?
Right, right.
You can't even do that anymore.
Yeah,
you'd be accused of fat shaming. But
that doesn't have a family of, you know, a category of jokes, that those types of jokes?
Not that I know of. I would refer
to
them.
It was so hot, you know, and then everybody shuts
out. You know, there are jokes they call bar jokes. Two guys walk into a bar and they say, who wrote those? They used to say prisoners wrote those jokes.
Right, but so.
And I never heard anybody give it a name.
Yeah, there are Polish jokes, there are bar jokes, there's knock knock jokes. I never, I always, and I've looked, I've never heard a category of joke for the type
that I'm
mentioning.
It's probably how fat was she jokes. That's the kind of category you could create for that.
Hey, you're starring in a new short film, you know, that has apparently a kind of a Woody Allen-ish type feel to it. What's this film? What's the big deal about this?
Yeah, it's another interesting thing that I get. I get a message. This girl, Noelle Leon, so she's based in L.A. She's an influencer. She's got just about a million followers on Instagram. She's on all the social media. She's a stand-up comedian. And she wrote to me and she goes, I'm coming to New York. Would you be interested in being in a film I'm doing? And her last film got millions and millions of views.
Wow.
So I said, of course. So, and she knew about my fascination with Woody Allen. There's a lot about me online, so people must read about it. Like this guy who contacted me tonight, he's got 7 million subscribers on YouTube and he wants to do stand-up comedy. I'm like, absolutely. And when you come to New York, let me know. So she came to New York and she showed me this script and we started filming it in Central Park, a very Woody Allen-ish kind of thing. And it was Woody that read my earliest material. He was my inspiration in comedy when he used to do stand-up on The Tonight Show. I mean, with Ed Sullivan. He did a joke I'll never forget. He said, I was walking down the street and a maniac threw a Bible out of a window. And if I hadn't had a bullet in my breast pocket, the Bible would have pierced my heart. said, the bullet saved his life. I remember that joke since I'm a kid. Woody was my inspiration and my idol, and I got to meet him. And it's a long story, but he read all my earliest material and told me it was very visual. So when she contacted me, I said, yes, I definitely want to do this. It's a story about a very unlikely friendship. This young, beautiful girl and I walk in the park every day and we just keep seeing each other, but we never speak. And then something magical happens.
So,
I don't want to give it away, but something magical happens.
Can people see this
well,
yet?
No, we're shooting it
right now.
Oh, you're
shooting it right now. Okay, all right. So you'll have to come back.
We'll be filming next week. when she comes back from L.A. She just left yesterday, and she'll be back, and we're going to do more
filming. All right, well, you got to keep us posted on that. That sounds pretty interesting.
It's really nice. And then at the end of November, I'm the official interviewer at the Vermont Comedy Festival. I'll be performing there, too. I'll be doing a special presentation.
Syrup jokes up there?
In Vermont. Yeah, I've never been to Vermont. You ever been up
there? No, no.
It's supposed to be beautiful.
I've heard nothing but good things. You know, Joe mentioned your process, right, of writing and crafting your act. When you perform, like you just did a couple of hours ago, how much, if people come see you, and let us behind the curtain a little bit, how much is your regular routine, and then how much changes from performance to performance?
That's an interesting question. First, I don't do crowd work. I don't do, where are you from, sir?
Uh-huh.
I don't care where people are from. I want them to laugh. To me, that's not particularly funny, playing off the audience. Some people do it. If you're the host of a show, people start out doing that to get the audience involved, to warm people up.
Right, I get that. I think I've done that.
I just warn the audience. I say, this is the most dangerous part of the show. This is the part of the show where I try to tell jokes to people who are not drunk yet. That's what I do. I warn them first, you know? But I don't really do crowd work. So I can change. It depends on how many minutes I get also. If I get a 15-minute spot, I know that there is more things that I can do. I bring a set list with me. Most comedians, are you familiar with the concept of a set list?
I don't think so.
Well, I have one in my wallet. If I grab it, I'll show it to you. It's an index card, and you write down the topics that you're going to discuss.
Gotcha.
And then you have to alter it once you're on stage, because when you get the red light, sometimes you only have 2 minutes.
Well, I mean, I do that every day for 4 hours. I have a certain amount of things that I want to get to, right. And then you get to it, you don't get to it.
Right, and then so what you do, look, you're improv. We're improv. Mm-hmm. It's one of the hardest things in the world. When I'm on the red carpet and I'm doing interviews with celebrities, you're improvising. There's no way to prepare. I just posted one on my Instagram with Jim Carrey that people are loving because we had such an intimate conversation within just a few minutes. Because when it's a big celebrity like that, their publicists are pulling them away because everybody wants to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be saying something really interesting to get their attention. And he was riveted. We just had this amazing conversation, very existential.
So where can people see that? ComedyMatters.tv?
ComedyMattersTV.com, but also on my Instagram, which is at Jeffrey Gurian, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y. You know how many people misspell Jeffrey these days? J-E-F-F-R-E-Y. G-U-R-I-A-N as in Nancy, yeah. On Instagram.
Well, good for you for taking it back. I respect that. Hey, Jeffrey, we're broadcasting today on KMOX in St. Louis, one of the biggest radio stations in America. You know anything about St. Louis? Know any St. Louis jokes?
I wish I did.
Yeah.
I don't know any St. Louis. Do you know any St. Louis?
Who knows St. Louis jokes? I don't. The only thing funny about St. Louis is the way they slice their bagels. They bread slice them. They slice them
vertically.
You serious?
Really?
Yeah.
Vertically?
I was shocked. It's a real thing, apparently. It's really wild. 800-848-9222. Mark is listening on WCBM in Baltimore. Hello, Mark.
Hey, I got three questions. The first one, I want to know about money jokes. You know, what is your funniest thing about money? And then your best jokes, do they just snap like in a second where you think about it and you got them?
What do you think, Jeffrey? I know that guy. He's a bit of a joker himself.
I don't know. I don't have any money jokes. It's interesting that people think that you would have jokes on every category that they could mention. There's nothing funny really about money, but I didn't get the second question. Do you remember what he asked?
No, he's kind of a clown. Okay. I know that fella. All right, we're going to continue with Jeffrey Gurian in a moment. And fortunately for you, Jeffrey is the author of a lot of great books, including Man Robs Bank with His Chin. And there's a lot of stories that are big stories, important stories in the news, but they didn't exactly make the front pages. Jeffrey has compiled a bunch of them, and he's going to bring one or two to our attention in just a minute, and we'll try and squeeze in some more of your questions as well. 800-848-9222, straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight.
This episode is brought to you by Pete's. Few things start your day better than a good coffee. That's why Pete's hand roast their coffee from a specific selection of high quality beans. And they don't just put those beans into anyone's hands. Pete's trains their roasters for 10,000 hours so they can master the roast that gives you the most. Pete's Coffee. Coffee for coffee people. Find Pete's online or at your local retailer.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. We have our happiness doctor and our happiness expert in studio. He is actually a doctor of the dentistry variety, but for the last few decades, he has done his utmost to make people smile, not by improving their smiles, but by improving their sense of humor. The one and only Jeffrey Gurian. Jeffrey Gurian has written many books and has done a lot of other interesting things, but you really should check him out at ComedyMattersTV.com. It's a window into all things Jeffrey Gurian. You can see some of the great interviews that he's done. There are links to a lot of other videos on there, a little bit about his biography. And you can get in contact with Jeffrey if you want to bring anything to his attention. It's ComedyMattersTV.com. Jeffrey, before we get to very interesting stories from Man Robs Bank with His Chin, a couple of people very eager to chat with you based on what we've said so far. Let me say hello first to Charles in Queens. Hello, Charles.
Hi, good morning, Frank. Good morning, Jeffrey.
Good morning.
I want to compliment Jeffrey. I like your sense of humor. You sound very funny.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. You were talking about Jews and Italians. I happen to be Orthodox Jewish, and I was once, this is a funny story, I met an Italian. I was about 22, 23 in a hotel for Passover, a kosher hotel. And I became friendly with the waiter who was Italian. So we became friends. We were about the same age. And then I was telling him some jokes about with the Jew was the butt of the joke. Then I figured I'll take the liberty of telling him an Italian joke. And I said to him, what's the difference between a Jewish actuary and an Italian actuary? He says, I don't know what. I said, the Jewish actuary tells you how many people are going to die next year. The Italian actuary tells you who. He went to his eyes were burning. First, I said about three or four jokes at my expense, Jewish expense. He wanted to kill me. Those days, that's about 50 years ago or so. And those days, Italians were very sensitive about every Italian is a mafioso. I think it's less so now. Am I right? I don't think that's sensitive. Maybe they are, but Sopranos, I don't know.
I don't know, but I have a question for you. Do you know my rabbi, Shmari Gerari?
That's Lubavitch, isn't it?
He's a Chabad rabbi in Brooklyn.
Chabad.
And everybody seems to know him.
Chabad Yeshivas.
Yeah, everybody seems to know him. All those guys that stop you in the street and ask you if you're Jewish, they want to put tzvillin on. I always ask them, and they all know Shmari Gerari.
If you say you're not Jewish, they'll say, do you know anybody in the neighborhood that's Jewish?
You're right.
They do great work. I graduated the Chabad Yeshiva. They're very very dedicated and very sincere, and they love every single
brave.
Jew. They love non-Jews, too. But they're very, really, very kind and wonderful people.
Charles,
thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Jeffrey, for people who have not heard our previous discussions, what is this book, Man Robs Bank with His Chin?
Well, I'll tell you. See, I'm fascinated by stories that are missed by mainstream media.
Same.
And nobody knows if people are telling the truth on
right.
the news. I like uplifting stories. So one of the stories, it's called Man Robs Bank with His Chin and Other Unusual Stories Missed by Mainstream Media, with blurbs from Richard Lewis from Curb Your Enthusiasm. He wrote these hilarious stories, and the author's longtime reputation as a top comedian makes you wonder why he isn't selling out clubs in North Korea. He's talking about me.
Gotcha.
And so this story is George Washington wore wooden pants. Now, a lot of people think that George Washington had wooden teeth.
Sure, that's why I heard
not
that.
Not true at all.
Not true.
As a child, he was very poor. His father made his diapers out of bark.
You're kidding.
No, and the Smithsonian Institute actually has a pair of George Washington's wooden pants. Do you remember the famous painting when he's crossing the Delaware?
Right, sure.
Well, that's why he's standing up in the boat. You can't sit down in wooden pants.
I always wondered about that.
That's the reason.
Now you know the rest of the story. Now it makes perfect sense.
And then there's a man grows turtle shell. It started with a small bump on his back. Like a lot of guys, they don't want to go to the doctor.
Sure, I'm the same way.
They don't like to go to the doctor forever. His wife is telling him that bump is getting bigger. It turned into a fully grown turtle shell.
My goodness. On a human?
On a human. So his wife says it's hard to sleep with the guy because he sleeps on his back because of the shell and his legs go in the air like while he's sleeping. She says he's always been shy, but now she really has to coax him out of his shell.
No, but for somebody like that, is there anything that can be done surgically for him?
When the shell was smaller, but now it's fully in, it covers his whole body.
Oh.
So he said, you know... But he said the main problem is his suits don't fit right because most designers don't make a jacket to fit over a shell.
I can understand that. I can understand that. That's rough.
And then there's High Roller wears mustache out of gold. Laszlo Chips Matouche is his name. Came into this casino wearing a solid gold mustache.
I heard about this guy. This was in Atlantic City.
Yeah, Atlantic City. And the glare from his mustache damaged people's eyesight. That's how highly polished it was.
See, that guy is a menace. He's got to do something about that mustache.
So hey, people who like these stories, you could find it in Man Robs Bank with His Chin. It's on Amazon. If you like interesting, bizarre stories, you'll have enough of them in this book.
All right. Search Gurian, G-U-R-I-A-N, Jeffrey with a J, not a G, Jeffrey Gurian. Marie is in Flanders. Hello, Marie.
Hi, everybody. Jeffrey, we're going to come see you now at Sag Harbor, my husband and I.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Yeah. That's so great. And I know Flanders. I've been to Flanders.
I know. And you tried to ask us if you could go to this house for a little while during the intermission. We honestly said, you can't do it, you won't make it. But real quick, two quick things for you, Frank, and for Mr. Jeffrey. Bell Book and Candle, excellent movie. I've seen it 50 times at least.
Wait, what film?
It's a very old movie, Bell Book and
Candle. Oh, Bell Book and Candle. Got it, I've heard of it.
At least 50 times, at least 50 times. But today's my husband's 67th birthday, Gordon.
Happy birthday.
And it's also Suzanne Summers.
Yeah, I mentioned that. That is sad.
I know you did.
Yeah, happy birthday to your husband. I hope you guys are doing something fun today.
Yeah, we're going to go out to lunch after I work now at the school with the kids.
All right. It sounds like a plan to me. Thank you, Marie.
But one quick joke, and I'm going to go. One quick joke. And my husband invented this joke or wrote it. When somebody tells you, try this, guys, you got to really try this. Somebody tells you their knee hurts, you be sympathetic. You say, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But is it your left knee or your high knee?
Well, I can promise you this, Marie. I don't think that joke is in danger of being stolen by your husband. I think he's going to be just fine with the ownership of that joke. Marie, thank you. Happy birthday to your husband. Hopefully he can wish for better writers. Jeffrey Gurian, it is always a treat to have you. Thank you.
It's my treat to be here with you, Frank. Thanks so much for having me on. It's always a blast.
People can learn more about Jeffrey at ComedyMattersTV.com. You can also check out all of his books on Amazon, including Man Robs Bank with His Chin. Next hour, we're going to get into some more serious pursuits, including the foreign policy scene with Dan Kovalik. Help control the pet population. Get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
The United States Border Patrol has exciting and rewarding career opportunities with the nation's largest law enforcement organization.
Earn great pay with outstanding federal benefits and up to $20,000 in recruitment incentives. Learn more online at cbp.gov/careers/USBP.